Finding that no satisfaction was to be obtained of Jupiter, whose whole intellect seemed to be absorbed by the bug, I now stepped into the boat and made sail. With a fair and strong breeze, we soon ran into the little cove to the northward of Fort Moultrie, and a walk of some 2 miles brought us to the hut. It was about 3 in the afternoon when we arrived. Legrand had been awaiting us in eager expectation. He grasped my hand with a nervous empressement, which alarmed me and strengthened the suspicions already entertained. His countenance was pale even to ghastliness, and his deep-set eyes glared with unnatural luster. After some inquiries respecting his health, I asked him, not knowing what better to say, if he had yet obtained the Scarabaeus from Lieutenant G. "Oh, yes," he replied, coloring violently. "I got it from him the next morning. Nothing should tempt me to part with that Scarabaeus. Do you know that Jupiter is quite right about it?" "In what way?" I asked, with a sad foreboding at heart. "In supposing it to be a bug of real gold." He said this with an air of profound seriousness, and I felt inexpressibly shocked. "This bug is to make my fortune," he continued, with a triumphant smile, "to reinstate me in my family possessions. Is it any wonder, then, that I prize it? Since fortune has thought fit to bestow it upon me, I have only to use it properly, and I shall arrive at the gold of which it is the index. Jupiter, bring me that Scarabaeus."
"But
what? De bug, massa? I'd rather not go for de trouble dat bug. You must get him for your own self." Hereupon, Legrand arose with a grave and stately air and brought me the beetle from a glass case in which it was enclosed. It was a beautiful Scarabaeus, and at that time unknown to naturalists, of course a great prize in a scientific point of view. There were 2 round black spots near one extremity of the back, and a long one near the other. The scales were exceedingly hard and glossy, with all the appearance of burnished gold. The weight of the insect was very remarkable, and, taking all things into consideration, I could hardly blame Jupiter for his opinion respecting it. But what to make of Legrand's concordance with that opinion, I could not for the life of me tell. "I sent for you," said he in a grandiloquent tone, when I had completed my examination of the beetle, "I sent for you that I might have your counsel and assistance in furthering the views of fate and of the bug." "My dear Legrand," I cried, interrupting him, "you are certainly unwell and had better use some little precautions. You shall go to bed, and I will remain with you a few days until you get over this. You are feverish, and—" "Feel my pulse," said he. I felt it, and to say the truth, found not the slightest indication of fever. "But you may be ill and yet have no fever. Allow me this once to prescribe for you. In the first place, go to bed. In the next, you are mistaken," he interposed. "I am as well as I can expect to be under the excitement which I suffer. If you really wish me well, you will relieve this excitement." "And how is this to be done?" "Very easily. Jupiter and myself are going upon an expedition into the hills, upon the mainland, and in this expedition we shall need the aid of some person in whom we can confide. You are the only one we can trust. Whether we succeed or fail, the excitement which you now perceive in me will be equally allayed." "I am anxious to oblige you in any way," I replied, "but do you mean to say that this infernal beetle has any connection with your expedition into the hills?" "It has." "Then, Legrand, I can become a party to no such absurd proceeding." "I am sorry, very sorry, for we shall have to try it by ourselves." "Try it by yourselves? The man is surely mad. But stay, how long do you propose to be absent?"
"Probably all night. We shall start immediately and be back, at all events, by sunrise."
"And will you promise me, upon your honor, that when this freak of yours is over, and the bug business—good
God settle to your satisfaction, you will then return home and follow my advice implicitly as that of your physician? Yes, I promise. And now let us be off, for we have no time to lose. With a heavy heart, I accompanied my friend. We started about 4 o'clock. Legrand, Jupiter, the dog, and myself. Jupiter had with him the scythe and spades, the whole of which he insisted upon carrying, more through fear, it seemed to me, of trusting either of the implements within reach of his master, than from any excess of industry or complacence. His demeanor was dogged in the extreme, and "dat deuced bug" were the sole words which escaped his lips during the journey. For my own part, I had charge of a couple of dark lanterns, while Legrand contented himself with a scarabaeus, which he carried attached to the end of a bit of whipcord, twirling it to and fro with the air of a conjurer as he went. When I observed this last plain evidence of my friend's aberration of mind, I could scarcely refrain from tears. I thought it best, however, to humor his fancy, at least for the present, or until I could adopt some more energetic measures with a chance of success. In the meantime, I endeavored, but all in vain, to sound him in regard to the object of the expedition. Having succeeded in inducing me to accompany him, he seemed unwilling to hold conversation upon any topic of minor importance, and to all my questions vouchsafed no other reply than, "We shall see." We crossed the creek at the head of the island by means of a skiff, and descending the high grounds on the shore of the mainland, proceeded in a northwesterly direction, through a tract of country excessively wild and desolate, where no trace of a human footstep was to be seen. Legrand led the way with decision, pausing only for an instant here and there, to consult what appeared to be certain landmarks of his own contrivance upon a former occasion. In this manner, we journeyed for about 2 hours, and the sun was just setting when we entered a region infinitely more dreary than any yet seen. It was a species of tableland near the summit of an almost inaccessible hill, densely wooded from base to pinnacle, and interspersed with huge crags that appeared to lie loosely upon the soil, and in many cases were prevented from precipitating themselves into the valleys below merely by the support of the trees against which they reclined. Deep ravines, in various directions, gave an air of still sterner solemnity to the scene. The natural platform to which we had clambered was thickly overgrown with brambles, through which we soon discovered that it would have been impossible to force our way but for the scythe, and Jupiter, by direction of his master, proceeded to clear for us a path to the foot of an enormously tall tulip tree, which stood, with some 8 or 10 oaks, upon the level, and far surpassed them all and all other trees which I had then ever seen, in the beauty of its foliage and form, in the wide spread of its branches, and in the general majesty of its appearance. When we reached this tree, Legrand turned to Jupiter and asked him if he thought he could climb it. The old man seemed a little staggered by the question, and for some moments made no reply. At length, he approached the huge trunk, walked slowly around it, and examined it with minute attention. When he had completed his scrutiny, he merely said, "Yes, massa, Jupe climb any tree he ever see in he life." "Then up with you, as soon as possible, for it will soon be too dark to see what we are about."
"How far must go up, massa?"
inquired Jupiter. "Get up the main trunk first, and then I will tell you which way to go. And here, stop. Take this beetle with you."
"De bug, Massa Will, de gold bug?"
cried the negro, drawing back in dismay.
"What for must tote de bug way up de tree? Damn if I do."
"If you are afraid, Jupe, a great big negro like you, to take hold of a harmless little dead beetle, why, you can carry it up by this string. But if you do not take it up with you in some way, I shall be under the necessity of breaking your head with this shovel."
"What the matter now, massa?"
said Jupe, evidently shamed into compliance.
"Always want for to raise fuss with old nigger. was only funning anyhow. Me? Feared the bug? What I care for the bug?
Here he took cautiously hold of the extreme end of the string, and maintaining the insect as far from his person as circumstances would permit, prepared to ascend the tree. In youth, the tulip tree, or Liriodendron tulipiferum, the most magnificent of American foresters, has a trunk peculiarly smooth and often rises to a great height without lateral branches. But in its riper age, the bark becomes gnarled and uneven, while many short limbs make their appearance on the stem. Thus, the difficulty of ascension in the present case lay more in semblance than in reality. Embracing the huge cylinder as closely as possible, with his arms and knees, seizing with his hands some projections, and resting his naked toes upon others, Jupiter, after one or two narrow escapes from falling, at length wriggled himself into the first great fork, and seemed to consider the whole business as virtually accomplished. The risk of the achievement was, in fact, now over, although the climber was some 60 or 70 feet from the ground.
"Which way must go now, Master Will?"
he asked. "Keep up the largest branch, the one on this side," said Legrand. The negro obeyed him promptly, and apparently with but little trouble, ascending higher and higher until no glimpse of his squat figure could be obtained through the dense foliage which enveloped it. Presently his voice was heard in a sort of halloo.
"How much further is got for go?"
"How high up are you?" asked Legrand.
"Ebber so fur," replied the negro. "Can see the sky from the top of the tree."
"Never mind the sky, but attend to what I say. Look down the trunk and count the limbs below you on this side. How many limbs have you passed?"
1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I done passed 5 big limb mass upon this side."
"Then go 1 limb higher." In a few minutes, the voice was heard again, announcing that the 7th limb was attained. "Now, Jupe," cried Legrand, evidently much excited, "I want you to work your way out upon the limb as far as you can. If you see anything strange, let me know." By this time, what little doubt I might have entertained of my poor friend's insanity was finally put at rest. I had no alternative but to conclude him stricken with lunacy, and I became seriously anxious about getting him home. While I was pondering upon what was best to be done, Jupiter's voice was again heard.
"Most feared for to venture upon this limb very far. To is dead limb pretty much all the way."
"Did you say it was a dead limb, Jupiter?" cried Legrand in a quavering voice.
"Yes, massa, him dead as the doornail, done up for sightin', done departed this here life."
"What in the name of heaven shall I do?" asked Legrand, seemingly in the greatest distress.
"Do?"
said I, glad of an opportunity to interpose a word. "Why, come home and go to bed. Come, now. That's a fine fellow. It's getting late. And besides, you remember your promise."
"Jupiter!"
cried he, without heeding me in the least. "Do you hear me?"
"Yes, Master Will, hear you ever so plain."
"Try the wood well, then, with your knife, and see if you think it very rotten."
"Him rotten, Master, sure enough,"
replied the negro in a few moments.
"But not so berry rotten as might be. Mo' venture out little way pon de limb by myself, that's true."
"By yourself? What do you mean?"
"Why, I mean the bug. T'is berry heavy bug. Suppose I drop him down first, and den de limb won't break with just the weight of one nigger."
"You infernal scoundrel," cried Legrand, apparently much relieved. "What do you mean by telling me such nonsense as that? As sure as you drop that beetle, I'll break your neck. Look here, Jupiter, do you hear me?"
"Yes, massa, need not holler, poor nigger, that style."
"Well, now listen. If you will venture out on the limb as far as you think safe and not let go the beetle, I'll make you a present of a silver dollar as soon as you get down."
"I'm gone, Massa Will. 'Deed I is,"
replied the negro very promptly,
Most out to the end now.
Out to the end? Here fairly screamed Legrand. Do you say you are out to the end of that limb?
Soon be to the end, massa. Oh, Lord God Almighty, what is this here upon the tree?
Well, cried Legrand, highly delighted, what is it?
Why, 'tain't nothing but a skull. Somebody been left him head up the tree, and the crows done gobble every bit of the meat off.
A skull, you say? Very well. How is it fastened to the limb? What holds it on?
Sure enough, massa, must look. What, this very curious circumstance, pon my word. There's a great big nail in the skull, what fastens up and onto the tree.
Well, now, Jupiter, do exactly as I tell you. Do you hear?
Yes, massa.
Pay attention, then. Find the left eye of the skull.
Hmm, whoo, that's good. Why, they ain't no eye left at all.
Curse your stupidity. Do you know your right hand from your left?
Yes, I knows. Dad knows all about that. Is my left hand what I chops the wood with?
To be sure, you are left-handed, and your left eye is on the same side as your left hand. Now, I suppose you can find the left eye of the skull, or the place where the left eye has been. Have you found it? Here was a long pause. At length, the negro asked,
Is the left eye of the skull upon the same side as the left hand of the skull, too? 'Cause the skull ain't got not a bit of a hand at all. Never mind. I got the left eye now. Here the left eye. What must do with it?
Let the beetle drop through it as far as the string will reach. But be careful and not let go your hold of the string.
All dat done, Master Will. Mighty easy thing for to put the bug through the hole. Look out for him there below.